My name is Sam Warburton, and in my opinion, the greatest injustices in modern day sport are that David Flatman was never picked for the Lions. I can't say this, boys.
Read it, Sam. Read it, okay?
And that Thomas George Llewellyn Shanklin wasn't Wales captain instead of me.
Not so hard, was it? Carry on.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Flats and Shanks. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 4 of our weekly podcast. My name is Thomas George Llewellyn Shanklin.
Hello. My name is Thomas George. Hello. I'm David Flatman. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Dave. You okay, boy?
Yeah, okay, boy.
Yeah.
Your hello was like, I thought you were going to do 3 of them and turn into a Cockney policeman from the 80s.
That's hello, isn't it?
Yes. Don't ruin my joke.
Was it a joke?
Yeah, it was meant to be funny.
You all right?
I'm all right. It's you I'm worried about. How's it going?
Yeah, I mean, we should explain that this is the second time we've done a podcast this week. We did one yesterday, which would have been Monday, and is still Monday. But unfortunately, the sound was so bad that we've had to can it because we're perfectionists. And if a product isn't right, we will not upload it.
The other way to look at it is, imagine how bad it must have been for us not to just think, oh, sod it, download it, send it, upload it, or whatever the word is.
We've had some terrible sound quality pods as well, so it was...
We've stuck with it.
It was probably up there with the worst we've done.
Yeah, and annoyingly, Shanks drove to Bath and wasted a whole afternoon. I wasted a couple of hours of my life, and Nolly Waterman joined us via... sort of remote Google Hangouts thing on the mic and got it all sorted out and stayed in to be with us and all that sort of stuff. So we've also wasted her time. So it is particularly annoying. And sorry about that, because you would have loved to hear from Nolly. And Nolly, we will get you back on soon. But
yeah, but feel more sorry for me though, isn't it?
You're the one who's lost out the most.
Yeah.
By a long way.
And I've also got stuck in that crazy traffic for those that live in South Wales, right by the Celtic Manor, about 5 o'clock.
Mate.
In the afternoon.
By the Bringglass Tunnel.
You know it. You know where all the crows were dying?
How many crows are there in the UK?
Too many, baby.
Done. Yeah, you've done badly out of that, and I'm sorry. But this was... like, I've got a really, really busy week this week. And this literally is slot... it's 2 o'clock roughly now. Just gone 2 on... Tuesday afternoon. This slot is I literally look at this slot and think I have got 2 episodes of Ozarks on Netflix in me in this slot. It was proper downtime, and it's my only downtime until Sunday night.
Cry me a river. And
no, perfectly happy to work. It's the only time I had to sit on my own until Sunday night. Sit still, rather.
I mean, once you finished Ozark series 2, which is good, I've told you about cracking into the Lumen Towers, but also Jack Ryan's really good on Amazon Prime.
What's that now?
Jack Ryan. It's
Harlan Coben. Is that Jack Ryan?
Jack Ryan is... they've done Patriot Games. So it's an author who writes Jack Ryan books. I can't remember who it is, but you know, you've heard of Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger. They're all Jack Ryan.
Yeah, seen them.
But there's a series.
Indiana Jones is in them.
Han Solo's in them, but yeah. It's a series on Amazon. It's really good.
Okay, just send me that on an email, yeah? So yeah. I don't forget that, so it's formalised.
I must also congratulate you and thank you for podcast recommendation, Dr. Death.
Oh yeah, how good.
I mean, if there's something I'm going to listen to just by the title, that is it.
Yeah, I know. That you don't judge a podcast by its title, except you do, and that is a very good title.
It's about a doctor, Dr. Dunch. Is that right?
Yeah.
Dr. Christopher Dunch, and he's a neurosurgeon. And he operates on a lot of people, and one dies. They all really have massive, huge after effects. Some can't walk again. And it's whether that he is an actual psychopath or he's just incompetent.
Yeah, is he grossly incompetent and therefore dangerous? Well, lethal in some cases, or is he a murderer and therefore lethal in some cases.
And the reason why he keeps getting work is because he's so important to hospitals in the US, because it brings in something ridiculous like $2.5 million in revenue to have a neurosurgeon there. But they're scared then to, I suppose, complain about him, because then there's libel cases and he could sue, and it's really complicated. But it's down to a couple of doctors really that end up catching wind of him and force the case to the district attorney general.
Yeah, but also it what it also boils down to is some people in positions of real power basically not shopping him and going legal in case it costs them a bit of money that they don't want to spend, and putting people's lives at risk. So actually, it's unforgivable of them as well. But it is a fascinating podcast. It's only 5 episodes long, isn't it?
I think we just covered all 5. So
there you go, done. No, you listen to it now.
No, you don't.
Anyway, he done it. He proper done it.
Hey, Dave, do you get that podcast I sent you the other week? Or slash a couple of days ago?
I haven't seen it yet.
The toy.
Well, listen to it. Listen to it.
The Toy Box Killers.
Is it about Christmas?
Yes.
Is it about Santa?
Christmas is dead, mate.
Right, no. So what's it about?
It's about this couple.
No, I haven't listened to it.
This couple in America, and they kidnap a woman in this case, but there's also other women that's been kidnapped. It's on Case File. It's the latest episode. It's quite harrowing, to be honest, mate. And they torture.
Sounds great.
They torture her. But really interesting in the same way about how they catch them. And that's what I like. You know that.
I do. I have worried in the past, boy, that you like the nasty stuff as well.
I don't get my kicks out of murder.
Yet. Yeah. Anymore.
Yeah. I used to. Murder, She Wrote. Oh.
Yeah.
Like a drug to me, that was.
Yeah. Or Columbo. Who is it we used to call Columbo that we played with?
Adam Jones.
Adam Jones, Welsh second row.
Bonkai.
Bonkai. Sweaty upper lip.
Yeah.
Memories of days. So what you been up to then, Tomboy?
Oh, so busy. You know what I'm like now, just constantly working in the Pro 14 for Premier Sport.
Oh.
What have I been up to? Well, I went up to Dublin on Wednesday to the Premier Sports Pro 14
show. When you say went up to Dublin?
Went across.
Okay, there, thank you.
Okay, went across to Dublin and slightly up.
It's like people from Barcelona going down to London. You're not.
You go down
to Southampton and you go up to Glasgow. You don't go down.
Yeah, well, I think Dublin from Cardiff is slightly up.
But it's really across, isn't it?
Okay.
Or over.
Okay, I went west to Dublin and did the Pro 14 show with Eddie O'Sullivan and Rory Lawson.
Two good men. Don't know Eddie O'Sullivan, but everyone seems to say he's a good guy, and Rory Lawson's a grade A human being.
Yes, he is. Really good. Good fun. Shot back in the morning, then went across then the following morning to Silverstone, where I had to do something for DS Smith. So they have this...
Rubbish!
They have this...
Rubbish!
Monthly Excellence Award. So anyone that's been excellent over a month in a calendar year, we get to do a fun day for them. And it was at Silverstone where there was virtual racing.
Are there 12 employees, that means?
There were 25,000 plus employees, no. But there's probably about 100 people there.
That had really good months.
Yes, across the year.
So it's like all the different players of the month from all the different teams from all across the year. Okay, fine. And they get to go and play games.
Yeah, you've got that in your head now, yeah?
Got it.
We had a chance at changing tyres of a Formula One car in the pit stop.
Were they bigger than you thought?
No, they weren't bigger than I thought. They were lighter than I thought. But then maybe I'm just going through a strength period at the moment. You know?
Yeah, are you bulking at the moment?
No, I haven't been for a while. It's a new baby,
happens,
isn't it?
Doesn't it? Gets yeah, it's way. What goes, isn't it? First thing that goes at the gym.
But also a tour of the track as well.
All right.
And just some exciting stuff, and then handed out awards. And
you didn't walk around the track, did you?
No, not allowed to walk around, but you get to go to the podium and they tell you some interesting facts that I've completely forgotten now. You go to the main comms room where they've got all the screens up where race officials make decisions on whether drivers have been fined and whether
TMO.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then nerds. And then on Saturday I went to commentate on Scarlett's. I went to a place in Ireland, the west of Ireland. Have a guess what it's called?
Connacht.
You what, mate?
Connacht.
Correct. And I made that mistake a few times. I've just called it Connaught.
Mm. It's not there, is it?
I've never heard you say it Connacht, but...
No, you told me that you told me the other day that you pronounce it Connacht, so I've just ruined your joke.
But yeah, so many people... Well, when I say so many, two people picked up on it saying he should know the team and how to pronounce the team he's playing.
Yeah, but that's like, you know...
Bath.
Yeah, well, it is, but it's more than that, because it's a foreign... It's like, do you want us to pronounce every... You know, every foreign player in their local accent, as it were. I don't know. Maybe you should, but I always find it funny when Eddie Butler's like Fofana. It's almost a bit like
Thomas,
and it's just a bit like I'd go Teddy Thomas or Fofana. I would say Fofana, but it's kind of like, you know, whatever you do, boy. If you say Connacht the whole way through, there will be seven people that tweet you saying you are a Norse or you've got it wrong. So I wouldn't worry too much about that, our kid. I know it's Connacht, but it's Connaught from now on, okay?
I didn't worry, mate, if I'm honest.
Do you sleep all right after that?
Like a baby.
I remember doing like the last World
Cup. 4 hours.
Sorry. A couple of years ago, I watched a game on TV. I forget who commentated on it now. It was like Shane Williams and someone else or something, whoever it was. I literally sat in the hotel and watched it on TV. And only got three. I got a load of you're getting tweets, but I got three tweets during the game that said, "You are the worst commentator in the world. You're ruining this game."
Oh, what? Only got them.
I was going to reply, "I'm still in my hotel room watching telly in my pants," but I thought, "I'll leave that. I'm okay with that. No need to reply." It wasn't actually me. I mean, when I do commentate, they say that as well. But sometimes, you know, so don't worry about it. Just say it wasn't you.
Yeah, but I was fine with it anyway, mate. I slept.
Okay.
Well done. But yeah, so was there, and that's been my week, really, mate. What have you been up to?
Well, great, mate.
Old buddy, old pal.
Well, our kid. I went to the Southampton boat show last week. That was good fun. I went to the ribeye ribs steaks. Massive. Right. Yeah, not steaks. That was great. Walked around and looked at loads of flashy boats that. Never going to buy. But we went out on one of the new ribeyes and they blasted us around. One of their pro drivers, a really nice man. And we had a nice bit of lunch, nice little drink. A lot of chicken wrap, actually. It's really nice. And that was good. That was good fun. That was just showing back. And I went shooting twice last week. I went to EJ Churchill in High Wycombe, which is a really nice shooting club. And on like a guests day kind of thing.
You were there with Babbage, weren't you?
Ronnie Regan was there. He was there. And you know, you walk in there and it is just, it's not all money, but it is almost all money. Like, the car park is a joke. So I'm extremely lucky that I get a sponsored car from Land Rover in lieu of work I do for Land Rover. And I get this gorgeous car to drive around in that I otherwise, you know, wouldn't have bought for myself. So very, very lucky. And it was one of about 30 in the car park. And it would not have been in the top 50. You know, I loved it, but it wouldn't have been in the top 50 most valuable cars in that car park. Like, it is incredible. Just an incredibly privileged environment. Then you walk in and you get a bacon sarnie before you go and a coffee before you go shooting, and you hear Babbage, Babbage. And it's Mark Regan. And he's there. He's got his all the gear on. He's got his special like shooting socks plus fours, whatever they are. He's got a shooting vest on, like a gilet with a mesh on the front, a gold mesh, and he's got two gold cartridges logged in his chest cartridge slots. It's just like he's just got it all going on, smashing the bacon sarnies in. That was very good to see. Very funny, good to see him. And I won a prize. So yeah, I won a prize at the shooting day.
What was it?
I won a goodie bag from Bremont Watches from those guys.
Did it have a watch inside?
No.
Don't want to know about it then?
Technically not.
Would it have like a pen, a notepad, a key ring, bottle opener?
That sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I won a prize for being the worst shot on the whole day.
Terror.
Thing is, though, Rob Fenwick...
Thing is, T-Rexes, it's really hard for someone like you to grab a gun because you've got really small arms. Mm. I suppose you had difficulty pulling the trigger because your fingers couldn't quite reach, maybe?
All the way around. Yeah. It wasn't easy. I have to use kids' guns, like spud guns. But I have to use a Tommy gun. But I was the worst shot of the day, and they reveled in giving me a prize. Rob Fenwick, who runs EJ Churchill, who's I used to think was a good guy. Now I actively dislike. Gave me the prize and everyone laughed and took the mickey out of me, and that was fine. And Ronnie loved it, as you can imagine, 9 G&Ts in. And then Rob runs after me afterwards. He's like, by the way, he gave me a bit of paper. You weren't the worst shot of the day. You were second worst. The worst has already gone home, though, so we had to give it to you. Which is a happy coincidence. So he humiliated me in front of everyone and then said, oh, by the way, you weren't the worst. I did not have a good day shooting. I had a great day shooting, but I didn't hit many. But then I went shooting again on Friday, and
won.
It was brilliant. No, it was brilliant fun. Land Rover day for a charity called Tusk, which was really good, and actually shot really well. Like shot fire, and I won a magnum of champagne, not for shooting, for guessing how many clays on the spread, but how many clays we'd hit. So a bit of shooting last week. But on Thursday, I filmed another sort of instalment of a Channel 5 advert ahead of one of the big games, Tigers against Saints at Twickenham.
Yeah,
with just Sean, that little lad. I did the Channel 5 advert with before, Flats and Small, they call it.
You're cheating on me, I know.
Yes. So that was nice. And then I went to the Anthony Joshua fight Saturday night at Wembley.
Saw the highlights of that.
Yeah, it was really good.
Were the highlights probably the best bit, or do you reckon the whole fight, was it a good fight?
It's a really good fight because it was all Povetkin to start with, because he's much lighter, much smaller, and obviously, therefore, quicker, you know, sharper. You just think, well, at some point, is he going to get tired of hitting this massive unit? Because Anthony Joshua's a lot bigger, 2 stone bigger, really. And in the end, he did. And he rocked Joshua a couple of times, like really hit him, broke his nose, really wobbled him in one of the early rounds. And then you just think he just started to look a little bit tired, and bang, Joshua hit him once. And okay, knocked him down again. But after that first shot, game over, mate. I mean, he obliterated him. It was so much power.
Have you seen Chabadi G's little interview with Eddie Hearn?
No.
So Povetkin, right? That's how you pronounce it, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't, because Chabadi G can't pronounce his V's, can he?
Povetkin.
Povetkin. You what, mate? It's really good.
No, I'll have a look for that.
Yeah. Oh, nice week then for you then.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. Then on Sunday, I went up to Leicester to watch them play against Worcester, which was the game of the weekend, maybe the game of the season so far.
David, old boy, it was a cracker.
It was lush.
It was a Christmas cracker.
It was blimmin' good.
Can I say Sunday, right? Sunday was a great day. Not only did you have the finale of The Bodyguard. I mean, have you got into The Bodyguard? And we're not talking Kevin Costner either.
I think I might be the only person in the UK that thinks it's rubbish.
You don't like it?
No, I think it's rubbish. I mean, I'll do it. I'll watch the rest of it, but I'm not having it.
What are you basing this?
Like, I don't know, the first couple, it just seems a bit...
You don't like the acting?
The acting I don't love.
Okay.
And it's like, hang on, let me remember, because I haven't watched one since last week. You do it then. I'm not an actor. So, you say that. I'm acting like a nice bloke on this pod, but I'm not. Because they bonk, don't they? The Bodyguard and Lavender. And the way they get to that is all a bit too false and quick for me. It's like, what? That's already happened. He's only been there 5 minutes. So it's kind of like...
Well, it's consensual. You know, it's just two adults.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting it's non-consensual. I'm contesting
Put your teeth in. Put your teeth in and then come back to me. What?
Veracity. I didn't like it. Okay. I don't think it's that good. And
I enjoyed it. But I do think the final episode, they rushed to the conclusions in the final episode, I thought.
Right.
I thought they could have strung it out over 2 episodes, really. I thought the confessions came a bit too easy, but I really did enjoy it. But I was in a dilemma on Sunday night because that was on, and I've been hooked and engrossed in that. But also, it was a PGA tournament going on, and Tiger Woods was in contention to win it. And I had to watch that as well. So I had one on the iPad, one on the TV.
Yeah.
What are you worried about? It was enthralling, mate. Now, Tiger hasn't won since 2013. It wasn't a major. It's 4 majors in a year. You know that, obviously.
I know. But
this was huge. This was incredible scenes as well. And you're talking about just a PGA tournament throughout the year. The crowds were going wild. Now, Tiger was walking up the 18th with Rory McIlroy and needed flat out security to get him through,
really?
Because he was just getting engulfed in support. They were all running up. They all wanted to video him. What that guy has done for golf is makes him the greatest of all time. Forget Jack Nicklaus.
Faldo.
Forget Faldo.
What about Laurie Cantor from Bath?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I didn't think of him.
He's one of the greatest golfers of all time. Do you know who one of the best golfing blokes I've met is?
But he can't putt.
Laurie Cantor's not in the top 50.
He can't putt. He can't putt.
Can he?
I just made it up.
Okay. He's a lovely man, really. But Eddie Pepperell, I really liked meeting. He was very, very nice bloke. Very good fun and very bright, I thought.
He finished really high up in one of the... I think it might have been either the Masters or the Open or... I can't remember which one it was, but he finished really high up and he put it down to having a few glasses of wine with his caddy.
Yeah.
I was going to play golf with Laurie Cantor this week, but Larry, let down.
Laurie let down.
Gave me some chat about, it's a sponsor's day, I've got to go to it, whatever. It's in your diary, mate. You make it.
Yeah. They've just announced it for next week, have they? Liar Cantor.
But that was incredible, and he won. But also, Justin Rose won just a cool $10 million. He won the FedEx Cup, which is like an accumulation of all the tournaments throughout the year.
Oh, mate.
And he was really good and really humble because he didn't want to take the celebrations away too much from Tiger because he was in the group before. But he had basically two putts to win this $10 million, and it was a fantastic putt. He only had like a little tap in at the end, and it was just a couple of cool little winks to family or friends or his wife in the crowd. Just like, yeah, just done 10 mil.
Thing is though, mate, after tax and fees, that isn't any more than 5 mil.
You're thinking...
And you can't live with that.
Is it worth it? And caddies take probably between 10-20% as well.
What's the point?
Yeah. Probably why I didn't take up golf.
So, all right, you got £4 million left after all your fees and stuff and everything's come out. But where is the tournament? America?
Yeah.
He's got to travel all that way.
He probably lives there, mate.
Still, you know, he's not at home watching Netflix. Is it worth $4 million?
No, he's on NetJets. That's what he's doing.
Exactly.
It's the Ryder Cup this week, so I am uber excited. I know you are as well.
Would you cut one of your fingers off for £4 million cash?
I would do it for way less than that.
Exactly. Ryder Cup, yeah, I can't wait. I'm all about Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood. They're my favourites.
Yeah, Lee Westwood's not playing, but...
Yeah, but I didn't say he was playing. I said he's my favourite.
But you cannot not like it. It's just, you don't get team golf, really. And this is team golf. This is where you see emotion on the tee. This is where you see more high-fiving because it's obviously an individual sport. So the only people they really celebrate with is their caddies. But when it becomes a team sport and a team environment, it's another level. But the Americans are looking really
collide.
Good.
Two continents collide.
But I don't want to talk any more golf because Laurie Cantor has really annoyed me. And to the point where I'm not going to accept his friend request on Facebook.
I'm not going to be like overly aggressive about this. And you know that we're watching our language now. But if I see him in Bath, I will twat him. Okay? I will do him. And I'll do him proper. Okay? Because after what he's done to you, because he's humiliated you on a WhatsApp group, teed you up, excuse the pun, for a game of golf because he's a pro and you're a legend and he's just absolutely bombed you out and humiliated you in front of your mates.
Just give him an inch punch to the bridge of the nose. Make his eyes water for me, all right?
That's it. That's all he needs. I'll Bruce Lee him right in the windpipe. Bridge hand, canter, down.
What's your thoughts, Big Dave, on Cipriani being left out of the... It's a prelim squad, right?
Yeah, it's just an extended training squad, Tom.
Yeah. I mean, it can't be a rugby decision, can it? Let's be honest.
Well...
We're in the honest zone.
Trust tree.
Yeah.
Disagree with it 100%. Eddie Jones has said before... that if he doesn't believe Cipriani's one of his top two fly halves, then he won't have him there because he doesn't think he's a good number three. So that's how he feels. So he's obviously got Farrell and Ford as his two tens, and Lazowski and Slade can cover, but they're the top two, Farrell and Ford. So that's how he feels about it. But I feel like the stuff he's saying about him being a highlights player and all that sort of stuff, and a, you know, just does the flashy stuff, just not having it. I think he's been great. all right, he wasn't brilliant against Saris. Nobody from Gloucester was, because they were completely dominated. And I'm sorry, but if you put Bowden Barrett in that Gloucester team at the weekend, there's very little he could have done, because they were absolutely swamped and swarmed by the Saris defence. They defended unbelievably well.
We'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah, but so...
Would you have Cipriani over George Ford?
No, okay. I'd have them both. George has been magnificent, I think. The first half against Worcester aside, they've only had, what, three games since Matt O'Connor left. But the minute Matt O'Connor left, George Ford suddenly got much better. Maybe there was just, he was released. Maybe he didn't like the way Matt O'Connor was making him play. But instantly, and I think having Kyle Eastman, even though Kyle only came off the bench for half an hour, instant difference, as I said before, instantly a better and more threatening side. Instantly Manu looks more dangerous.
Yeah,
George and Kyle, lovely combo.
Don't get too excited now, mate. We'll talk rugby in a bit. This is just...
Anyway, Cipriani, not having it. I think you got to have him in. One thing I think that is a factor, and I'm guessing, but I reckon it's true. Or I wouldn't say it. At Gloucester, they've effectively given Cipriani the attack and said, you know what you're doing. You're getting results. He's very controlling. He's a very dominant 10. So he will absolutely tell you where to be and when. And if you're not there, you'll get it. I don't think England will give him that.
A bit like
Farrell.
A bit like you and your relationship. Just control.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, control free. So it's like with most of my friendships. I don't think England will give him that, because they've got Farrell and he's the boss, and George is a bit of a boss, and Eddie's a boss, and they don't want that in there, and they're not willing to let him control it, which is reasonable, but I just think,
I mean, it's a different level though, isn't it, like club rugby to international rugby. And people like Jonathan Sexton will control, say, the Irish attack, but he's been there a long time, he's proven, whilst Cipriani is still a little bit unproven at international level, no matter how good he is, and how we know how good he can be, he's still not 100% proven at that level yet. But he's not been given the chance, I know that. So it's taken a big risk to say, right, you run the attack.
I think so, but then I bet you he'd go in and be willing not to run it at that level. Yeah. He'd be willing to sit in and fit in, I'm sure he would. But when he got to play for England against South Africa, he was fantastic, and he produced a moment of magic that won him the test. Like, what do you want? Highlights, mate. He produced a highlights real moment against a world-class team in the last minute. What do you want? Like, you know, they've only picked him once, and once he won in the game. So it's like, well, okay, he hasn't been picked that much, but he hasn't got much. He's unproven, but when you've asked him to deliver, he has. Anyway, I just think that what Eddie Jones can't... I think Eddie Jones just doesn't like him, and I think it is... It seems to me like he just doesn't like the bloke. And if he doesn't, then part of me thinks, well, he should say so, but part of me thinks, well, he shouldn't, because then it becomes personal and you just can't win then. He can't win if it gets personal. So I just think he doesn't want to pick him because he doesn't like him. That's, I'm guessing there, but I reckon I'm right. I just disagree entirely. And Sam Simmons I would have in there. Don Armand I would have in there. Luke Cowan-Dickie, I know he's been injured a bit, but geez, I don't know how you can watch Luke Cowan-Dickie play and not put him in the England squad. That's what I would say. He is a force of nature. He is brilliant. How can you not put him in? So there are some decisions I disagree with, but whomever he'd picked, we'd all disagree with somebody, wouldn't we?
We would. I tell you what is really fresh at the moment still, and it has been for a while, but it's becoming a huge issue now, is still a concussion debate, and still what is deemed as a high tackle, what is deemed as a red card, what is deemed as a yellow card. So Joe Marler gets yellow carded for leading with an elbow at the weekend. Leads with his elbow, goes up high, connects with, I can't remember whose jaw it was, yellow card off. Now that happens in the Edinburgh Leinster game as well, and Schumann leads with his elbow and it connects with one of the Leinster players' bottom part of the face, of the jaw, gets red carded. Now there has to be some consistency, and I know it's really difficult to talk about, because people who have been concussed and people will just say, well, you know, their counter argument is concussion. It is law cases. It's brain damage, you know, and it's very difficult. You cannot argue against that. But I just worry that any contact with the head now in rugby, where there's no intent, is just going to ruin the game, because it's a tough game. You know, whichever way you look at it, you are and potentially will get hurt at some stage. Now, every breakdown, there's going to be impact to the head, whether it's intended or not. And I worry that we're going to get to the point where every breakdown is going to be highlighted because a knee is accidentally connected with a head. And there's no intent there, but a knee's connected with a head. So I think we're at a massive crossroads at the moment. And I look, for all those listening out there, 100% player welfare is number one. But I also think we have to be sensible for what is best for the game as well.
Yeah, and it's really interesting.
It's really difficult to talk about because the counter argument is, can you feel it? Is brain damage.
Yeah, so brain damage and lawsuits win. So, however, it is a really interesting situation rugby finds itself in because the very essence of what makes it popular is that it is big physical specimens being big and physical with each other. That's the thing. And reducing tackle height is unquestionably a good idea.
Nobody's going to do that, though, Dave. Nobody is going to tackle round their knees and hips every single time. These yellow cards and red cards that weekend was because the tackler was going high.
Yeah.
You know, it's as we said last week, is you've got to be so brave to tackle low, and not everyone's going to do that. You know, you tackle high with your chest because it's easier. You know, it hurts when you tackle low, doesn't it? Because you've got your shoulder, you've got your head. Once you're set in that position, you can't move. And people tackle high because they can move and they can adjust and they can jam in or they can move out. When you're set low like that, you're making a tackle and you're going to get stepped.
But also, it's just a letter of the law is something we say a lot when we talk about rugby these days. But you're right. The low tackling, I always felt as a player that tackling that low, sort of hip height and below, felt lethal to me head on and, you know, people moving at pace because you got hips and knees down there and pumping legs and you get knocked out. I just think it is lethal.
Side tackle's different when you're tackling low. Because
that's different, yeah. But I used to think, when I see chop tackles now, when I used to play, I used to think those low tackles and those chop tackles are just, they are knockouts and dislocated shoulders waiting to happen. I hate them. I still hate them now. But tackling high isn't only about trying to nail them in the head. It's about stopping the ball being offloaded because offloads kill you. It's also about stopping people sooner and harder because if you tackle around the waist, they often make ground and they can present the ball nicely to their teammates if they can't offload it. So there are reasons why players tackle high. And I think you're right. We want to bring the average tackle height down, but you are always, we must, I think, always have 6'7" Will Spencer playing against 5'10" or 5'11" Tommy Taylor. We must always have that, or Duncan Weir or whomever. We must have that because rugby is, as soon as it becomes uniform, it becomes uniform in size, it becomes more like rugby league. And rugby league's great, but we're not meant to be rugby league. So you need massive guys against small guys. That's how that's the game. And it's part of it's the rugby piece, I think. But then it's part of its identity, or a major part of it. And we must have that. And if you are 6'7", 6'8", you will not have a place in the game if you are not allowed to tackle at chest height. Or, you know, sort of approaching shoulder height. You will have to set so early to tackle to get low.
And there's more chance you're going to get bounced off because you're on the base, you're on your heels. And not everyone, and no one can. You can't always go aggressively into a tackle either. You know, sometimes, a lot of the time, you've got to do soak-up tackles because, A, the person you're tackling is a lot bigger than you. B, you're not in a position to actually accelerate into
caught last minute.
But also, there's some documents by Dr. Ross Tucker out there, and I'm going to put them on our Twitter, the link on our Twitter website. It's really interesting because they've done all this analysis about concussion, about what tackles you're more likely to get concussed, and that is when the attacker is running high, and you think, oh, that's obvious, but, you know, attackers do run low as well, and also the defender is tackling high. That's the most common concussion. But you're not going to get every tackler wanting to go around hip height, so it's
kind of an argument that it's a funny one because nobody reasonable really is trying to win an argument.
No,
it's just kind of we're all trying to get there in different ways. But as soon as you say game's gone soft or all this concussion stuff is stupid and it's ridiculous and they're over the top, well, I'm afraid your opinion doesn't matter anymore. I mean, because it's gone, because we all know it does matter. It's just, I think it's partly rugby needs to find a balance between protecting its players as well as it can and to stop apologising for itself and what it is. I mean, it's a difficult one, because if you're going to ban any contact, you cannot stop contact in rugby, unless it's touch. You cannot stop contact with the head. You cannot stop your head getting hit. You can limit it, you can reduce it, but we must not think, I don't think, that we can stop the contact being over the head. Look at the mauls, look at the rucks. It's just not possible.
And it's the whole intent as well. I mean, intent,
difficult to measure, though.
Intent doesn't matter, but then, you know, you could be hitting a ruck. You don't intend to knee someone in the face, but that happens because you're hitting a ruck. So,
yeah.
But anyway, well, I'm going to tweet these links to Dr. Ross Tucker's chats on, or what would you call it? Synopsis on?
Yeah.
On concussion. It's really interesting.
I'm hoping to get Ross Tucker on at some point in the next few weeks. He's away, but he's said he's keen to do it. So he's got a fascinating take on things, because he doesn't just go around speculating like the rest of us. He actually knows stuff. So that'll be quite interesting.
Dave, have a Kit Kat.
So let's talk about some rugby, Tommy. Let's do it. It's a rugby podcast, okay? And don't you forget that.
I do sometimes.
I know, me too. Funny, isn't it?
Shall we start with what was the best game? I know it's probably the wrong one to start with because it's a Sunday game, but...
Do what we like. Do what we like, mate. It's our podcast, isn't it?
Leicester-Worcester. That was the game of the season, of the week.
Yes.
Oh, maybe, gosh, the, yes. Maybe the season.
Golly, yes. Amazing game, Tom. I mean, listeners, you all know about this game by now, and you've probably seen the highlights videos. There's no point in going through the whole game again, but it was from minute 1/minute 2, Worcester just shredded Leicester.
Completely.
They shredded them through the middle. Shredded them. So Duncan Weir was unplayable in the first half. He was fantastic. His Bryce Heem, what a player. He's always been good, but he looked fab at the weekend. And Ryan Mills, I think, is consistently one of the best backs in the Premiership and never seems to get a mention when it comes to playing 12 at a higher level. But I think he's really, really good. And
do you think if Ryan Mills was at Wasps, he'd be in that England squad?
I bet you he'd be close. Honestly, I think he's at a club that is used to being near the bottom of the league, really doesn't help him. If he played for a, I'm not going to say a bigger club because that's rude. If he played for a club that is expected to be higher up the league and generally wins more matches, I think he would be in or very close to an England squad because he seems to do everything brilliantly.
I think if he was Scottish, he'd be captain of Scotland.
Be Lions captain.
Yeah. But yeah, he was good.
He'd be World Cup winner.
He was really good at the weekend. But you're right though, Duncan Weir, just simple stuff. That is, passes were out in front, correct decisions, didn't do anything overly flashy, but the ball, and if when you're a centre or a back, you want the ball from the fly off, you want it right in front of you, you don't want it to be able to check your stride at all, and it was just perfect. And they had a great platform, but their attack was on point that first half.
And oh, it was great.
You could say it's poor Leicester defence, but the reason it was poor Leicester defence is because when Worcester attacked, all the decoys and dummy runners were viable options. When they're viable options, you have to hold for them. So you've got a 50-50 choice a lot of the time. And the decision-making was brilliant. You know, because if you've got two runners, you're a ball player, you've got two runners, you've got to make the decision and you've got to see in a split second who's in space, who isn't in space. And Worcester picked those options perfectly.
However, what I would say is they did attack very well, but Leicester's defence, if you watch Sarries against Gloucester, which we'll talk about briefly in a minute, you watch that, I mean, that is what defence should look like. That's what their defence should look like. It doesn't look like that. And I think Brett Deacon, who's coaching their defence, you know, you speak to people on the inside and on the touchlines and all that sort of stuff and in press rooms and quiet little conversations in corridors. And I've never heard anyone say a bad word about him as a coach, as a bloke, as a player. So I think they've got a gem in Brett Deacon. However, this is particularly tough for him because he is under the spotlight. It's his first job as a senior coach, defence coach at Tigers, big job. And they're shipping 30 points plus a week at the moment. So there's a huge amount of pressure on him. And while he might be a very good coach and a hard-working guy, and he will know a lot about defending at Prem level because he played a lot of Prem level, and I'm sure he's very studious. He just can't know as much as he will know 10 years from now. So I would be inclined, if this trend, defensive trend, continues from Tigers, to actually bring in a senior defence coach, keep Brett Deacon, and make sure he stays, because they'll need him for a long time. But let him, give him someone to learn off, give him someone to, you know, whose experience he can soak up. Because, you know, I'd bring in a, you know, a Brad Davis or somebody. He's the best I work with defensively. I mean, he's just, I don't know who they bring in, but it's England's appointment of John Mitchell, there aren't many defensive coaches about, it seems.
You're worried that they might lose Deacon? Because
No, I don't, and I'm not saying they should bin Deacon and get a different defensive coach. I don't think that's how you do it. I think you, it's a bit like Nick Kennedy, you know.
Yeah.
Wonderful player for London Irish. Really, really popular bloke. And very, very bright. So he's a great guy to be a young DOR, but not if you leave him on his own, because he hasn't done it before. So who's his support? Brendan Venter, clearly very good at what he does, but never there. So you don't, I think you don't just stick someone junior in a senior position and say good luck. You know, because that, you know, it's all very well, you know, it's all very well giving, being sort of innovative enough and brave enough to give a young guy, give him his head, but actually what if it doesn't work brilliantly and it's expected to work brilliantly and you're at a big club with massive expectations and standards? There's a huge amount of pressure, and I'd get to the point where I think a couple more weeks like the weekend, and I think it's almost not fair not to give him someone else for support or someone else to learn from.
It's a bit I reckon it's a bit like John Thomas. So he went to Bristol, he played for Bristol, and he was, when he finished, he was in charge of defence. Now, the first season Bristol had in the Aviva, they went straight back down.
Yeah.
But it's like you invest in players, you've also got to invest in coaches as well, because former players will have a lot of knowledge, but it might take a little bit of time for them to get that knowledge out. So, mm-hmm. And it's not going to happen straight away. So you're right, though. You don't want to lose these players through the system, because, you know, you're fresh out of the game, you become a coach, things don't go well for you for whatever reason, could be nothing to do with you, because good players make a good coach. You get sacked, you lose your confidence straight away, and then you're just lost into the system. So,
yeah, it's high pressure. And the thing is, the difference with, say, a Bristol, yes, invest in the coach, but Leicester cannot afford to not, you know, they will not accept or not being top four, let alone top six or being relegated. You know, that's not an option. That's never going to happen to Tigers, but in the near future. But I think their standards are so high that I actually think that you need to invest. Investing in Brett Deacon is not just keeping him there. Definitely keep him there. I'd extend his contract. I don't know how long it is. Extend it. Keep him there.
But give him someone to learn off as well.
Yes. That's what I would do, because the defence wasn't up to it at the weekend. And George Ford ripped them back into the game in the second half, along with Kyle Eastman. They were both brilliant. George Ford was amazing that second half. What performance?
It's no coincidence that Leicester's attack, I think, improved dramatically when Kyle Eastman came on.
Yeah, hugely.
First off, makes a great call, puts, I can't remember, was it Guy Thompson?
Guy Thompson.
You know, he's got an option behind as well, but totally picks the right option, takes it flat, puts the Worcester player in two minds who he's got. But also, you know, you're right, George Ford scored a great individual try, as did Johnny May with a lovely chip over. But it was, right to the end, a great game. And fair play to Worcester, digging right in at the end. But even so, they sliced through them right at the 77th minute mark off a line-out, I think it was.
Yeah.
Just separated the winger and the centre. Was it off a five-man?
Yeah, this is the thing. So you're on a five-man line-out. So defensively, Leicester are defending a five-man line-out. So they've got two back rowers in the back line, and they're still beaten out wide. They're still beaten to an edge. Now, that just shouldn't, as far as I'm aware of first phase, I was always in the line-out, Tommy, so you tell me, that shouldn't happen, should it?
Not out wide, no. I mean, they're often broken around 10. You're just trying to get one-on-ones. But with a five-man line-out, you've got an extra two players in that back line. You can really use your line speed to get up into players' visions. And yeah, you're right, you shouldn't get broken out wide there. Because often five-man line-outs is, you look at a score after second or third phase. You know, so you use the big carries as decoys, or you use them and you truck them up, and then you either flash back or you have strike plays. But to score and to break the line so easily off that was poor defence. Yeah.
Hell of a win, that.
Yeah.
Hell of a win. Saracens, Gloucester briefly. Gloucester had it absolutely handed to them, to be honest. And I think Gloucester are going to be fine. It just, they're not going to come up against teams that good every week. And I don't think anybody would have come close to Saracens at the weekend. They were so good, defensively so good.
Gloucester have been great at the start of the season, but it's only when you actually go to Saracens' home ground, Allianz Park, to, I suppose, gauge where you actually are as a team. And that's I think that's the real test of how good you are. And I mean, Saracens were on form, there's no doubt about that. Your mate Dave Strettle scored a nice try after a lovely little break from Maitland.
Yeah, lovely. He's class. Stretch is class.
Just what gets on the outside of Trinder. Trinder gets sucked in a little
bit. He's just so good at scoring. Strettle is just so good at scoring tries, like Ashton, which is quite important when it's your job.
Yeah. Liam Williams at 15 again was good. Scored a hat-trick
class
last week or the week before, wasn't it? A 15-metre hat-trick, I think it was.
Amazing.
Yeah, they all count, don't
Thomas Waldron would beat that, I reckon. I bet you he's got less than few hat-trick. I bet you he has.
But Saracens just didn't allow Gloucester to get any front foot ball. So, you know, Rose was huge in defence, as was Atoji, as was Skelton. You know, they just, Jake Pledry, Ludlow, Ackerman, they just had no real go forward ball because they were just getting stopped dead in their tracks by this huge, well-drilled Saris pack.
Yeah. They're so well drilled. They're so well coached. They're so relaxed in defence. I mean,
I love that penalty advantage. Booming up and under, right under the posts.
Oh, yeah. Nice, eh?
Great option, that.
Yeah, great option. Carnage. Absolute carnage. Marrow scored from it, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Remember it? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like that. So that was a hell of a game. What do you want to talk about next, Tommy? What game do you want to talk about? Newcastle Exeter was interesting on Friday night. Really, the story of that game is, I think, Exeter just being brutally good in the opposition 22. They're good at getting there for starters because they've got so many good ball carriers, so many good ball players. But once they get in there, it's not like they score every time, but they score almost every time. It's either a drive or it's relentless pick and go. It's just, or they suck your numbers in by doing that and beat you out wide. They're just so intense, but accurate in opposition 22s, and Henry Slade just gets better and better and better. He looked great on Friday night.
Is he starting for England in your team?
Yep. Oh, yes. Yeah. Easy. Oh, yeah, boy. So that was actually a really good win for Chiefs. They look really good. Saracens is the most sort of ominous performance of the weekend, but very, very good from Chiefs. And of course, Quinns went to Bristol and lost.
Yes. Ian Madigan would be great at taking corners, wouldn't he? And free kicks.
Yes.
Seen the curl on it. It's like,
yeah.
It's properly old school, isn't it? John Taylor from the touchline, just curling
it's
nice,
it in. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been great for them. He's been really good so far, and especially from the tee, really, really good, which is massively important in their position. So they were, you know, Luatu had another good game. It was a terrible, terrible game of rugby, but who cares when you win it? It's when you lose games like that it's just brutal, and Quinns just didn't fire at all. You can see why Paul Gustard's pretty...
Conditions weren't great.
Upset.
But Danny Kerr, he's now top try scorer, isn't he, for Harlequins. Takes over from Hugo Monier. Yeah, I believe so.
Takes over from Hugo Monier.
Hugo?
Okay, no, Hugo. Oh, right, okay. Mm. That is good. That is good. Good on him. You know what, Tommy? Let's digress for a sec. Did you know that I used to play a bit?
A little bit.
When I used to play a bit, there were certain scrum halves that were really highly rated, and they were so easy to play against as a tight forward because they were just very little threat. And you realise quite quickly that they're really highly rated because they've got a good pass and a good box kick. Don't bother me that. I don't want someone who skins me on the fringes. I don't want someone who whacks me when I try and pick and go. I don't want someone who's strong, so when they step me at guard or bodyguard, they make meters because they're strong enough to run through my arm, you know? That's what I don't want. Danny Kerr, nightmare to play against. Nightmare, but not the biggest nightmare. The biggest nightmare was Sharkey, Mark Robinson, Kiwi, All Black, who played for Saints. Nightmare to play against. If he decided to pick and go, he was harder to tackle, genuinely harder to tackle than most front row, front five forwards. He was brutal. If you didn't get it right, he would brush off anybody, bounce anybody. Khan Foto Ali can be like that. But Danny Kerr, I always found really, really, like, not that it was really hard. I mean, it is hard, but you had to be on high alert the whole time. The whole time.
Do you know what he's doing now in Auckland?
No.
Packing fish boxes.
Sharky?
Yeah.
Is he?
No, I just made it up.
He boxed at my testimonial boxing night.
Was he any good?
He fought someone who'd had quite a lot of fights before from a proper boxing club. Yeah, cleaned him up. He was good.
You didn't ask me then? Scared I'd murder someone. Just see red.
That's it.
Wouldn't be able to stop.
That's it.
Bit of news from the Pro 14, mate. Southern Got Kings. Then. They won one game last year, okay? That's how good they are.
Yeah.
They beat Glasgow. Glasgow.
I mean, I need to act surprised, but I already know this.
Glasgow,
wow,
a decent team. Yeah, they beat
them. Yeah, that's great, that. Well, not great for Glasgow, but great news for them.
It was at home in Southern Kings' home in South Africa. 38-28. I was at Connacht versus Scarlets. Bundyaki was...
He had a hell of a game, Tommy.
Sheer brilliance.
Now, he hasn't played yet this year, it seems, has he?
He came off the bench last week, but against Edinburgh. But this was his first start of the season. And Scarlets had welcomed back Reece Patchell. So you thought that would sort of sharpen up their attack a little bit.
Yeah.
But Connacht's defence was really good, especially out wide, especially when Scarlets tried to beat them out wide. But Bundyaki just targeted Patchell all game. Now, Reece Patchell's just recovered from a HIA. So he's going to have a couple of confidence issues with tackling, because once you get concussed, you're not going to be 100%, are you, going to tackle?
No.
But they did that, and he broke through and offloaded superbly for Farrell to score. But just in defence, in attack, all day, he was everywhere. Really good game from him. And also a really good game from Sean O'Brien. Not the Sean O'Brien, another Sean O'Brien in the back row.
Different one,
yeah. So, not the greatest game by the Scarlets, but they still produced some lovely tries, and McNichol scored, and so did Tom Pridey after a nice little break from half
can
a break.
You can you remember final scores? I never can.
Yeah, 33-20 to Connacht.
Connacht.
Connacht. But there was a really good game at the Arms Park on Friday night. Cardiff Blues versus Munster. Blues
They're
were
back. They're
naught,
back.
Naught from three. So they'd lost to Leinster, they'd lost to Benetton, they'd lost to Zebra, all in the last minutes, and they came out, and it was just, you know, when you see a team and then you think, wow, that is just, it's nothing like the last three games, and you just think, right, if you could bottle that up and play like that all season, you'd win the league. It was one of those performances. Wills Hulahula was unplayable.
Mm.
Breaking tackles for fun.
Beauty.
Scoring tries, just absolutely phenomenal. And so was Anscombe as well. He came in at 10. Last minute pull out by Jared Evans. So disrupted him a little bit, but really good performance. I'm working there for the Blues Cheaters game this weekend, Friday.
I bet you are. Yeah. You're all over the place, aren't you, boy?
I know. I hope it doesn't go to my head. That's all I'm saying.
I feel like it has a little bit.
Little bit.
You're a bit aggressive about, like,
my opinions now.
Yeah, you're getting punchy. You're like Jiffy now.
Do you notice I'm wearing like more designer clothes as well?
Yeah, I do notice. And when I called you the other day, someone picked it up and said Tom Shanklin's office. And I was like, hang on a minute.
I'm Instagramming myself in the gym more as well.
Just doing you're like Tom Evans now.
Just doing PBs left, right, and centre.
No, things are going great for you. I'm really, really happy. Well done. Things are really taking off. Have you just turned away and done a massive cough expecting no one can hear it?
No.
Liar.
Right, time for some listeners' jokes. Should we have some?
Yes.
Apparently the Danish Navy have started putting barcodes on their ships so they can Scandinavian.
Scandinavian.
Yeah, then that'll do me.
It's clean.
That'll do me. It's a Christmas cracker joke, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not offensive.
That'll do me, fella. That's fine. I mean, you're not going to make anyone really laugh much, is it? Maybe a child.
Yeah, but
fine.
They wouldn't even know where Scandinavia is. Probably think it's where...
What, for Gap Services? Right, next.
Probably think it's where Peter Pan lives.
It's Martin from Maidstone. Just want to find out, do you know how you sell a deaf man a pig? Do you want to buy a pig?
I quite like that.
Do you know him?
I feel like I do know him. I know you're joking the jokes. He's from my hometown, glorious Maidstone. I feel like I'm. If it's the Martin I know, then I know him. If it's not, then I don't.
We did have a joke from Simon Hammerschmidt now. We know him from KPMG. He was also on... Whose testimony was he on? Christian Day. Yeah. But the joke is 2.5 minutes long, and I have listened to it, and I refuse...
Have you?
...to play a joke that's 2.5 minutes long.
Right. Hammerschmidt, sort your life out, mate.
You cannot leave 2.5 minute joke. I mean...
It can't be funny enough. It can't be funny enough.
It's just too...
If it's like Mickey Flanagan doing a 2.5 minute joke, I bet you it'd be hilarious. Was Hammerschmidt's funny at the end really, really killing funny?
He said it was his favourite joke, and...
Right.
I mean, we'll go one more, shall we?
Yeah.
This is Nighty, sat by the pool in Colombia. I've got a joke about the Incredible Hammer Man. The circus was in town, and they wanted new acts, so they advertised, they had a few things turn up, bearded lady, normal shit. Anyway, this guy turns up. I'm the Incredible Hammer Man. So the ringmaster said, well, what do you do? He said, just give me a chance tonight. You won't be disappointed. Anyway, Big Top opens on the evening. Ringmaster comes out. Got a new act, he said. New act. It's called the Incredible Hammer Man. So with that, this guy comes out. Wallpaper table on the front. Puts loads of different hammers on the front. Sledgehammer, toffee hammer, ballpoint hammer, claw hammer. They're all there. Anyway, he said, I need a member of the audience to volunteer. So this guy puts his hand up. He said, I'll do it. Come down the front, sir. Come down the front. So he says, choose a hammer. So the bloke says, So he picks up this sledgehammer. And he said, right, now whack me in the head with it. And the guy's like, don't be so stupid, I'll kill you. He said, I'm the Incredible Hammer Man. It won't be a problem. So anyway, this guy whacks the Incredible Hammer Man round the head, out cold on the floor. Call an ambulance. He's rushed into hospital in a coma. Anyway, next day, ringmaster goes in, visits him. No change. He's in a coma. He's in a bad way. Day after... No, he's still in a coma, bad way. Anyway, 3-4 days later, goes in again, still the same. Anyway, after a week, the circus is moving on. So the ringmaster leaves town. Anyway, a year later, he arrives back and he thinks, oh, Incredible Hammer Man. So he went to the hospital. He said, about a year ago, he said, I was in here with a guy, Incredible Hammer Man. He said, what happened? She said, oh, he come round. And he said, oh, that's amazing. What did he say? She went, da-da!
Better. I like that one a lot.
Very good.
I don't know whether that's I like it more good. Because of the accent, and it makes me think of Mark Regan.
And the fact that he's by the pool in Colombia. I think that's the best one we've had so far.
Colombia.
That's very good.
Exotic destination. Right, yeah, keep the jokes coming. We do like them, but they've got to be shorter than 2.5 minutes, Simon Hammerschmidt.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that will do us.
All right, lad.
Well, you look after yourself, all right?
No, you. You look after yourself. And good luck with everything.
I just want to say, sunbed won't hurt you now and again.
Really? You think I'm looking pallid?
Looking a bit peaky, yeah.
Am I?
But there we are. Get some vitamin D in you, all right?
All right, kid. I'll have a go at it. Goodbye, everyone, and have a nice week. Ta-ra.
Yeah, ciao.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.